true love is a wild and precious thing. It don't grow on old magnolias or only blossom in the spring. No, the glory of true love is it will last your whole life through. Never will go out of fashion, always will look good on you. You can climb the highest mountain, touch the moon and stars above, but old faithful just a phantom compared to the glory of true love.
Leaning Toward Wisdom, episode 4053. Time alone will tell the story of the glory of true love. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. You can find the show notes for today's episode over at leaningtowardwisdom.com. Just plug in the number 4053 and it'll take you right there. You're listening to John Prine from a 2005 record entitled Fair and Square. The song is Glory of True Love. And it's what we're going to talk about next.
Where the governor calls me Gov, you can give them all the goodwill for the glory of true love. You can climb the highest mountain, touch the moon and stars above.
Just this morning, D-Milked. I'm a subscriber. It's a design, art, and photography website, and they posted a series of pictures, photographs, in a post that is entitled, In Love for More Than 50 Years. Couples pose for heartwarming photo series. And here's what D. Milk wrote about the author and the photographer. Her name is Lauren Fleshman. When you're about 20 years old, it's hard to imagine couples that stayed together for more than 3 years. But photographer Lauren Fleshman aimed at ones that had been in love for far, far longer. Her book, The Lovers, is all about couples who had been together for more than 50 years. The lovebirds seem very open when talking about how they got together and still very much in love. This project was inspired by a series of love letters written by my grandfather to my grandmother during World War II that I found in a book next to his bed. Lauren states on her website, the letters spoke of a young love, the type filled with expectations of a new life together. They connected me to my grandfather and his 59-year marriage in a way that I had not been able to connect to him in life. And this was the inspiration behind the project. The stories that these old couples tell are heart-gripping and cut at times. That's the kind of love we wish to be asked about in 50 years or so. Okay, well, some of us aren't going to have to wait nearly that long. I'm joining the ranks of those who are quickly closing in on the golden anniversary. My name is Randy Cantrell. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. This is Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast. You can find everything you need over at the website, which is, well, it's got the same name, leaningtowardwisdom.com. This is episode, as I said, 4053. People sometimes ask, well, why do podcasters have episode numbers? I don't know about other podcasters, but I do it merely so people can, if they choose, they can find the show notes, the blog post, and whatever affiliated links might be over there. When Dr. Phil first burst onto the national media stage, by the way, he was a DFW guy. He had a firm in Las Colinas, Texas, a suburb of DFW, that helped attorneys with jury selection you know, that was his foray, able to discern who might be more sympathetic to your position. I remember hearing him early on describe seasoned marriage as a soft place to fall. We had probably been married 20 years or so at the time. This past January, we celebrated our 37th year of marriage. And that description, a soft place to fall, it resonated with me 20 years ago. Because that's exactly how I felt about my love for my wife. And I feel more so that way today. Old love isn't like young love. It's better. Don't get me wrong. Young love is terrific. The romance, the passion, the energy, the discovery, the optimism. I mean, all you got to do is go to the show notes. Go to leaningtowardwisdom.com, find episode 4053, and you will see a photograph. It's the first and maybe only selfie I've ever taken, by the way. I mean, look at these kids. Just look at these kids. Circa 1977. Yeah, it's a picture of me and Rhonda. Young love. Taken, by the way, with an Instamatic camera, which is quite a feat because you've no way of knowing if you're even in the frame. It's not like digital photography today. Young love. But, hey, like my hairline, young love fades. And unlike my hair, it doesn't fade away, though. It fades into something far, far deeper. As Dr. Phil said, a soft place to fall. Okay, but this isn't about my marriage. It's about love. It's about marriage. It's about finding that soft place to fall. And I hope you've got somebody special that you love very much. And if you don't, I hope you find them sooner than later, because true love changes everything. And yeah, that's the subject of today's show. The senses of love. Music, obviously, is a big part of my life. It's a big part of this podcast, but you already know that. Love has fueled more songs than probably any other subject. I mean, can there be? I mean, whatever number two is, it's got to be distant, doesn't it? For good reason. We are either chasing love, we are either trying to figure out love, we are enjoying love, or we are lamenting the loss of love. And there's nothing like it. Nothing. Music enters every courtship. That's why you hear couples talk about our song. I mean, even non-music lovers find a place for music in their heart when their heart is in the throes of love. The other day, I read that women are highly attracted by smells, more so than men. But smells are important for men, too. For me, it wasn't perfume so much as it was the totality of the smells, subtle smells. You know, smells like the smell of her leather clutch or her scent while sitting next to me in the car, the smell of her lip gloss, and yes, the taste. There's another scent. The scent of her hair, and just roll them all up and package them. And while we were dating with hundreds of miles separating us, I could survive for days, weeks on the smells. The smells triggered a sense of her presence, and there was just instant comfort in that. Now, we survived a long distance dating life for about 3 years in the mid 70s. Music was big. Because, well, when you're driving all night long, 11 hours one way, you have time to listen to lots of your favorite tunes. Time alone. I wheel into her driveway. It's about 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning. Arriving anywhere else, I would be bleary-eyed. I would be incoherent, but yeah, not parked in her driveway. I'm not. There's nothing like anxious love. Sometimes, you know, when you can't wait to see somebody you love. Time alone with them. And from the time we first dated, neither of us dated anybody else. We wrote what is now called snail mail. It's the only kind of mail we knew. It's all we had, letters to each other every single day. Yeah, every single day. We saved our money so we could make these phone calls occasionally after 11 p.m. when the long distance rates went down. You don't remember that. Well, some of you do. The glory of true love. Yeah, that's what seen, well, it's what's seen when a man loves a woman. '68, Percy Sledge. I bought the record Atlantic Soul Classics that contained this tune, When a Man Loves a Woman. Can't keep his mind on nothing else. Boy, that's a fact, isn't it? Yeah, you know that feeling. If you don't, I hope you do. Well, after nearly 3 years of this, I had had enough. I mean, it was time to make this love permanent by asking this girl to be my wife. And we joined hands. And my best friend's dad presided over the ceremony 37 years ago now. Well, 37 years ago, January. Yeah, time alone does tell the story of the glory of true love. Taking love and loved ones for granted. Now, I know it is impractical to live every day as infatuated with her as I once was. I realize that. I didn't realize it at the time, but you know, time makes that abundantly clear. I confess, though, that daily, I walk by the room where she's sewing or where she's typing. She's always had a medical transcription business out of the house. And I can walk by and I want to walk in and I want to hug her and I want to tell her how much I love her. Sometimes I do it. And other times it seems like it just might be too much of an interruption. That's what happens, you know, when you both work out of home offices. It happens daily. Every single day it happens. But now, for hours, we can be under the same roof, doing our work, living in our own world without speaking. I mean, you look at that young man in the picture in 1977, and there's no way that you would have convinced him that that's how life would be about 38 years after I took that selfie with my Instamatic camera. I didn't take her for granted in 1977, and I don't take her for granted in 2015. But through the years, I've grown more scared. I mean, it doesn't make sense, does it? But it will. I've grown more scared. I've grown scared of losing her. I've grown scared of losing her to sickness, to death. We have endured many, many trials. We have endured many, many struggles. No different than most couples who have spent a lifetime together. Faith in God, faith in each other, faith in our union. I mean, that has guided us through it all. Time alone can tell lots of stories, but time alone doesn't make for deeper love. And time sure won't. It won't cure the hurt that comes with some love. One of my favorite songs, written in 1975 by Robbie Robertson, the leader of the band. He wrote about a lost love and how nothing he did seemed to make any difference. because, as he wrote, the sun don't shine anymore. And the song first appeared on their 1975 album, Northern Lights, Southern Cross. Man, people that do not know about the band and Robbie Robertson's group, man, you're missing it. We lost Levon Helm, the drummer. I don't know. You know, there's just something about this Americana music, for those of you that are not in North America. The band, these guys, and they did a lot of playing with Bob Dylan, but a lot of their music was kind of described as Americana music. Just kind of got that old, just that sense of oldness about it, you know? I'm going to include the lyrics to this song because I think it's a terrific song. LeaningTowardWisdom.com, episode 4053, and you can read the lyrics here. It's a great, great tune. It is a song about the hurt of lost love. Lost love is bad. It's a lingering hurt. And when you've been married as long as I have been married, the prospect of lost love, not lost because you've lost the person to somebody else, but because something else happened. Yeah, that is among the most dreaded fears I know. And so I don't want to take a single day for granted with my wife. But I know that I do. You know, in spite of my best intentions, I realize that there are times and there are days that, and maybe even weeks, that I do take her for granted. We have work that we have to do. We've got things that we have to do. I mean, you know, it's we got life that happens. And other than embracing those we love, sometimes that life gets in the way. You know, lately in the day job, I'm having lots of conversations about being present. It seems to be a growing theme in every organization, being present, because we are living in this hectic pace where we are challenged by our schedules, we are challenged by the demands on our time, we have digital devices that we just can never be disconnected from. And so the conscientious people, they want to improve their ability to be in the moment. And it's refreshing. I'm glad to see it, that people want it. It's just, it's kind of a shame, isn't it, that it's such a pervasive problem. But I think it's proof that the same problems we face at home creep into our work and vice versa. Electronic distractions. You know, they tempt us to take people and to take experiences for granted. All you've got to do, and I do this with some regularity. You sit in any conference room in the world and attend a meeting, and unless they collect the cell phones at the door, you're going to see people staring at their phones during the meeting. And increasingly, tablets, laptops, and I mean in organizations with a relatively low tech IQ. I'm not talking about surfing the net. I'm not talking about checking Facebook. I'm talking about people that are performing work. They're sending, they're receiving work-related text messages. They've got spreadsheets open. They've got PowerPoint presentations open. They've got all kinds of things open. If you talk with them individually, as I have, and what you find out is that many of them, sometimes all of them, they feel they're too disconnected during their FaceTime together. It's as though all of this tethering, all of this electronic tethering has got us connected in one area of our life, and yet when it comes to physical presence, FaceTime, we're incredibly disconnected. And I encounter many, many people who wish it were different. They just don't know how to fix it. I mean, for some of them, leaving their phones or their tablets out of the meeting is just not reasonable because they've got too many people who need to be in touch with them constantly. And I think back to a different time, and I'm wondering, you know, I can look into the face of a 30-something-year-old and think, you know, you've got such a different experience than I do, because I do remember a day when not every employee had access to you at a moment's notice. And it's like, well, how did we possibly get anything done? I don't know, but we did. Am I telling you that it'd be easier for me to go back? No, I'm not telling you that at all. But I am telling you that problem in the workplace. Yeah, it's a problem that has no business infecting our homes. I mean, there are just simply too many touch points. Too many people who need just a bit of time and just a bit of your attention. That's the problem at work. You know, that's usually not the problem at home. It's not the problem at home that there are just too many people. There are too many people in my family who just need a little bit of my time. Too many people who just need a little bit of attention from me. That's not the problem at home. Even if you have a big family, that's not the problem at home. Distraction. That's the problem. Distraction afflicts us at work and at home. Well, and at restaurants and wherever else we go. I mean, just watch couples. I mean, forget larger groups. Watch couples sitting down at a restaurant eating a meal. And I dare you to find a couple where at least one of them isn't constantly looking at a 3-inch screen. It's digital crack cocaine. And people cannot resist it. I've sat in pre-concert crowds, and I don't know, there's just sights and sounds, and there's just things to absorb. Especially if the pre-concert playlist that the sound guys have played, or whoever picks that, if that's pretty compelling, it's just, I don't know. There's something about just kind of being in the moment as you get ready for Tom Petty to hit the stage or whomever it may be. And yet you look around the crowd. Yeah, you see some people and they're taking photographs, a lot of selfies. But there's an awful lot of people that are just, man, they're hunkered down, bent over their phone. And I wonder how many people are going to have surgery like I had to have some months ago. You know, the cervical fusion, which, I don't know, mine, the doctor said, it's just age and wear and tear. But when you see the posture of people hunkered over a phone, over a digital device, it's like they're orthopedic surgeons, I don't know, 15, 20 years from now, heyday, going to be a heyday. I mean, how can such a small handheld device distract us from our spouse or our family or even our friends? We're afraid we'll miss something, and we're right. We might miss something, That tweet, that Facebook post, a Vine video or a Snapchat message, I mean, it's truly addictive and it never stops. The digitally connected world is streaming and screaming at us with an endless vengeance. It's like the Hotel California. You can check in, but you can never leave. Well, you can, I guess. You just don't. You just don't choose to leave because, again, it's digital crack cocaine. Social scientists are going to be studying these things for years to come. I'm sure they're studying them right now. I'm not smart enough to participate in the study. Well, I could be studied, but I just can't do the studying. I'm not that smart. I can only observe and work to lean more toward wisdom and away from the foolishness of digital dependency. And so when across from me sits the love of my life, a woman I fear losing, I mean, it should be easy to be in that moment. Oh, I may miss a blog post. I may miss a tweet. I may miss hundreds or thousands of tweets, and I may miss any number of other digital footprints that are made by people that I've never even met. But what if I miss a moment with this woman I once drove all night long to see, to spend less than 32 hours with her before having to drive another 11 hours to go back home? By the way, arriving around 1 a.m. Monday morning, then having to attend early morning class, followed by work. I once did that. For the better part of 3 years, I did that. We've heard that old saying that nobody lying on their deathbed ever said, I wish I'd spent more time at the office. Well, I'd hate to realize that I didn't devote myself to being in the moment with my wife because I couldn't resist something much less important, something like a tweet. You know what? There probably are some people, I hate to say this, but I think I've known some people who very well might on their deathbed say, I wish I would have spent more time at the office. I'm not one of those. No, not at all. Saying no to some things in order to say yes to more important things.
Not the words, you know I'll always love you. It's not the words, I wish I could stay. It's more the way your lips look as you spoke them, and how the moonlight fell upon your face. I married her just because she looks like you.
And for every time. He is Lyle Lovett from the album Lyle Lovett and His Large Band in 1989. And it's a terrifically funny song. I married her just because she looks like you. It's a funny song, but it makes me think of how shallow some people can be with love. You know, all the stories of couples whose love turns to hatred. It makes me wonder what happened. It makes me wonder how seriously they entered marriage. I mean, maybe they were like Lyle. You know, I married her just because she looks like you. I'm not naive now. I know quite a few people marry for reasons other than love. Shallow reasons like money, beauty, and status and fame, and I don't know. You know, the list probably could, well, just go as long as your imagination would carry you. There are other ways to be shallow, though, even when we marry for love. Communication can be shallow. Some couples never discuss real issues. I know this because throughout my life, I've had enough conversations with married people who admit that they never talk about serious things. I have often, I will tell you, sat across from a married man and asked, well, what does your wife think about that? And maybe it was a career challenge. Maybe it was some career opportunity. Maybe it was some difficulty in their life. And too often the answer is, well, I haven't told her. I haven't talked about it. And I'm always surprised at that. I'm just stunned at that. How can you not tell your spouse something important? How can you not talk with your spouse about what is happening in your own life?
I can hear them there buzzing, and I ain't done nothing since I woke up today. How the hell can a person go to work in the morning and come home in the evening and have nothing to say? Make me an angel.
Yeah, I mean, pardon the curse word, the H word, but it's a great question, isn't it, that Prine wrote in his terrific song, Angel from Montgomery. How can a person go to work in the morning and come home in the evening, have nothing to say? By the way, that's from his original record in 1971, just his John Prine record. Angel from Montgomery. I don't know. That lyric has always intrigued me. I don't know the answer to the question. How can a person go to work in the morning, come home in the evening, and they got nothing to say? They got nothing. But that's exactly how it goes in too many marriages. Shallow conversation, no depth. Keep a simple, stupid talk ruins any hope of deeper love, deeper connection. I guess shallow talk is better than no talk at all, though. Inches away sits a person that we claim to love. In our hand is a device connected to people we may casually know if we know them at all, or complete strangers known only to us through social media, and we too often say yes to the strangers while ignoring the one to whom we said I do. I've got no good explanation for this. It's a compulsion, maybe an addiction, that many people just can't seem to ignore. And like shallow talk, it's lack of desire. It's an unwillingness. It's poor self-discipline. Maybe it's a lack of love. I could make a good argument that the man who refuses to inform his wife of the most troubling issues in his life, he's being dishonest, he's being deceitful, he is not exhibiting the kind of love he would want from her. I mean, you're either partners or you're not. Oh, yeah, I know saying no can be hard. Saying no to keeping the talk shallow so you can sit down together and fully discuss really important things. I know that seems tougher for some than others. I don't pretend to understand it because it's not how I'm wired. I'm wired for depth, but not everybody is. Talk of what you ate for lunch can be as deep as some folks ever get, though. I know. I've heard it. I've eavesdropped in. I've even been in the conversations. And how does that deepen your relationship with your spouse? And I'm baffled. I'm baffled by people who can sit still to engage in long conversations about nothing, but then they seem visibly uncomfortable and they quickly even leave the room if they can when talk turns to something important. But experience has taught me that some people prefer to live life like a Seinfeld episode, always having conversations about nothing. They're uncomfortable having conversations about nothing. But when it turns to something, okay, not quite so comfortable. Deception creeps into some marriages and love, and it breaks up what once was true love. It's not a Seinfeld episode. It's more sinister than that. I don't know how that happens, but it's sad to me. I don't want to have it. I don't want to experience it. I don't want you to experience it. Carried to an extreme, I think it can turn the glory of true love into pure hatred. I've seen it. You have too. But we don't want that. And surely that's not happening to you. We want true love. True love, and I hope that's exactly what is happening to you.
Well, it's the same old song. Boy,
happening here. I love her, she loved me too. We had a lot of love, now it's all through. And for a while, the hearts beat one as they met each other, smile for smile. They danced away the night and they praised the other style. Oh, yes, it's true. It's happening to you. It's happening. I love her, she loved me too. We had a lot of love, now it's all through.
Well, I hope you have a lot of love, and I hope it's not through. He is John Prine. It's from his 1980 record, Storm Windows. The song is It's Happening to You. And I hope what is happening to you is true love, and I hope you hang on to it, and I hope you don't get distracted. I hope you push all your chips into the middle of the table and go all in on true love. My name is Randy Cantrell, Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. There is a great record that is coming out March the 24th, 2015. As I sit here and record today inside the Yellow Studio, it is February the 25th, Wednesday, 2015. I'm anxiously awaiting this record because I own every record this man has ever recorded. His name is Van Morrison. He is otherwise known as Van the Man. He's coming out with this record entitled Duets, Reworking the Catalog. And he sings a song that I'm going to play as we go out. If you pre-buy this record, obviously it's not out yet, but depending on when you're listening to this, if you're listening to this before March the 24th, 2015, you can go to iTunes and you can buy this record and you will get this track, as I did, immediately upon purchase of the record. And I would encourage you to dive deep into this man's catalog. You can tell I'm a John Prine fan. Many people saying, well, John Prine, he can't sing. Yeah, he can sing his own songs, though. He's a terrific, terrific guy. But this is a very different style guy, Van Morrison. And I love him. I absolutely love his work. And I've been a huge fan and a huge consumer of his music for a very long time. This is a duet done with Michael Bublé. He's also a terrific guy. Now, I own a couple of things by Bublé. I can't tell you that I own everything he's done, but this is a track that's real, real good, and it's called Real, Real Gone.
and the little fingertips touch my face. You're a friend of mine.
Well, my love come tumbling down. Solomon Burke said,
if you leave me, why don't you call me?
James Brown said, when you're tired of what you got,
try
me,
try me,
try me.
James Brown.